Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Comforting classics,
fresh new content,
something old,
something new.
Join Emma and Lucy each month for a new podcast from Fan Critical. Hello and welcome to another episode of Something Old, Something New, the show where Lucy, that's me, and Emma discuss the old classics that we love and the new, or new to us at least, films or TV that we have been enjoying recently. Emma, how have you been?
Busy and glad that we're finally coming into what I like to refer to as springtime, which is the month of February, coming towards the month of March, where the spring flowers come out, the sun shines for longer.
Spring flowers sprouting, as they say. And I feel like we've had some deceptively warm days where you think, oh yeah, it's basically summer. And then no, it's actually really cold. February's still winter. But it is getting lighter, which it never ceases to amaze me, no matter how many years I've spent on this planet. When it starts getting lighter at the end of winter, I'm like, oh my God, it's actually light at five.
And it's miraculous to, like for a change, be able to, I don't know, leave the house after work and it's still a bit of sunshine.
Yeah, you're not pitch black. And same in the mornings, it's not pitch black when you wake up. So yeah, pretty nice. So we're all looking forward to what spring slash summer brings. I'm going to come to you first regarding our topics for today. So if you could tell me your something old, please, Emma.
So my something old this month is a favourite that I believe, and I like to think, Lucy, you will agree, is a sort of late 80s, early 90s classic.
Oh yeah, that's a good time for film and TV. Well, actually, probably not TV, more film.
So this is a film that has undercover cops from the FBI. It has waves, it has surfers, has drugs, it has bikers, it has Keanu Reeves, and it has Patrick Swayze.
Classic.
It is the classic Point Break.
Absolutely love it.
So the other night, Joe and I were sat, and Joe has watched, I will say, probably every movie that's ever been released ever.
Yes, we've heard this before about, get him on the pod.
Yeah, to be fair, he should be doing this instead of me.
You charlatan, get him involved.
Indeed, what a hack I am. And I said, you know what I fancy? I fancy a classic action flick, but something, you know, with a bit of substance. And by substance, I mean, you know, beautifully attractive floppy-haired men.
Just surfing, just, you know, it's crime. But with surfers, like, why hasn't that been done before or since? We don't talk about the remake.
No, we will never talk about the remake. Ever, ever, ever. And Joe said, oh, what about something with Keanu?
Always.
And I went, oh, you can't go wrong. What are you thinking? Bill and Ted, Constantine? He went, no, what about Point Break? And I thought, it's an excellent choice, actually. That is an excellent choice.
It is.
And you forget, actually, what a bloody fantastic storyline it is. I mean, there's everything in this. There's skydiving. There's drug raids, there's murder, there's shootouts, there's motorbikes, there's people being beaten up because they're surfing in the wrong place.
There's presidential masks worn by robbers.
There's bank robbery, actual, like, full-on bank robbery. There's an escape in a plane. There's parachuting.
Keanu fires his gun up in the air and goes, ah, to quote Hot
There's
Fuzz.
A hostage situation.
Yeah, it is very, I mean,
it's got everything.
You can watch that film and I think, yeah, as I said, like, Hot Fuzz, obviously, makes reference to it, but a lot of the tropes that we see in action films since then have kind of come from that. And I think the central relationship slash friendship slash antagonism between Patrick Swayze and Keanu is really interesting and something that does get revisited in other films. You know, the hunter versus the hunted, but I think this does it in a really interesting and fresh way.
Yeah, it does. And actually, I think the chemistry between Keanu and Swayze is my favourite part of the film. Mm. That is the love story of Point Break.
It really is.
For me. So, yeah, a couple of things that are my favourite things about this film. One is when Keanu first like surfing lesson, and he is so fucking shit.
It's a hard sport.
I could not surf.
You have to have upper body strength for one, so that rules me out. Core.
And
I don't
core
have a core.
What rules me out.
Apple core, maybe, yep, but nothing more.
Have to be able to stand up straight.
Yeah, I struggle just on dry land, let alone on a board on water. It's very hard.
And there's a bit where she's yelling at him, both legs up at the same time. And then she's going, you've got it. And he's still got one knee down. But my second favourite bit is the kind of what you'd almost now call, I suppose, a post-credit scene, where obviously he's left the bureau. And then all of a sudden you realise where he is. And he's made it to that beach in Australia for the 50-year storm. And there he is. There's Swayze in a poncho.
Yeah.
Like just some random country-esque poncho. And Keanu eventually relents and he lets him go and surf that last wave, which of course he's never coming back from, because sometimes you ride the wave so hard, you die.
Yeah, that is the message of this film, I think.
If anything, it's a cautionary tale.
They are adrenaline junkies, aren't they? The criminals.
Yeah.
So not only are they criminals, they're adrenaline junkies. They love skydiving and just extreme sports. Very unusual.
I think it's quite fascinating, actually, the film, in the respect that, like, the relationship between Keanu and Swayze, that no matter how bad it gets, they still really have this, like, mutual affection and respect for each other. There's a real, like, something beyond a friendship has been formed there, hasn't it?
Where I think Keanu wants to join secretly, but he's too much of
I think he 100%
he's
does.
A goody two-shoes. He's too much of a goody two-shoes to actually break the law. But I think he loves the camaraderie and the kind of brotherhood and the excitement of it all as well.
Well, you think about when they basically kidnap him and make him jump out of a plane. He's not quite sure if he believes his parachute is, you know, safe.
Well, I don't think we don't believe around. It, do we? We don't know. We're like, you're going to kill him because he's a fed.
Even when you rewatch it, there's still that little bit of fear where you think, has he got a chute in that bag? But then it becomes all of them in this group flying and floating through the air, free falling from a plane, holding hands and just really reveling in the thrill and the rush of, you know, being so alive yet so close to death, where you really, that's how you understand the relationship between all of them. And I just think it's excellent.
That's a lovely, it's an amazingly well shot scene, the scene you're talking about, the skydiving. Again, for an action film, I think it's quite unusual to have something like that, because of the beauty of it. It's like balletic, the way they float through the sky. Fall through the sky, I guess you'd say. Falling with style.
Fall rapidly towards their own death.
Certain death.
Yeah. Almost certain death.
Well, I mean, one of them does die, don't they? In that skydive. Or gets shot. Something happens.
No, so towards the end, where we're going to rescue Keanu's new love, who did lose her parents in a car accident, unlike the liar that is Keanu, the FBI agent.
When
one of the guys gets shot, and then he's thrown out of the plane with all the money in a bag, and, you know, he's alive when he gets thrown out and pulls the parachute, and then he's dead by the time he hits the ground. Obviously, because he's been shot.
Yes, that's
in
it. I knew that there was a parachuting death, even if it's not caused by the parachuting.
Anything filmed before, say, like, I don't know, 98, 99? That's an action film, still has a bit of heart to it.
And usually not CGI. So you've got stunts, which I think really helps.
Actual stunts.
Yeah. And
does really help.
And they have these big stars. I'm not sure how big stars they were at the time, to be fair, but they have these charismatic stars in them, which I just think action films now, you just couldn't really probably pay me to watch one, unless Dwayne The Rock Johnson's in one. But these old ones, the 90s ones, we went through a real phase of like The Fugitive and just all the kind of Harrison Ford ones. In The Line of Fire, all of that. It's just, they're just different cheddar, really. They're just different to what's around now.
Absolutely. They are, and they age so well.
They
like
do. They do. Just bring it back to cheese.
Every time, always. And actually, you know, cheese is a good point, because a lot of people say that the 80s and 90s, like, classic action films are cheesy. I don't think they are. I think they're beautiful.
Yeah.
They've got a heart. They've got a story.
Yeah. And they're like, I mean, this is sort of a serious film, but it obviously has the fun elements with the extreme sports. But it takes a story, it pays the story respect, and it takes it seriously without it being like po-faced.
And you also, I think you really feel the kind of gut-wrenching revelation that the people who I think Keanu now sees as family, really, they've opened up this whole new world to him. When he realizes that they're the people he's supposed to be trying to bring down, and that, you know, the absolute like tear between the right thing to do and what his heart wants him to do is just like, you really feel it. I genuinely think you do. I think it's an excellent piece of film.
And has Keanu ever looked better? Oh my, has anyone looked better in film? He looks so good. What's the word? My brain is a sieve and I haven't had much sleep and I'm a bit hungover.
Yeah, Amanda.
Objectify him. Don't objectify him, but he's just beautiful to look at on screen.
He is always beautiful, but I will say, I think this is Swayze's hottest role.
I don't like his hair.
I wasn't looking much at the hair, to be honest. I was looking a lot of the neck down.
God bless him and rest him. Patrick Swayze doesn't really do anything for me. Even as Johnny Castle, like, I get it, but I'm not like...
Really?
I'm just not attracted to him at all. I think he's charismatic and I enjoy his screen presence, but I'm not... I don't know. Not for me.
Maybe it's the character.
But how can you get past the hair? The hair's really bad. Sorry.
This is why we'll never fight over men, Lucy.
Yeah, normally blonde is very much my wheelhouse, but yeah, no, I'm not Patrick Swayze. But
there you go.
Rest in
peace. Listeners, you've learned something new. Swayze blonde surfer dude hair is not
like
Lucy's
that. Not, it's almost like a bowl cut, like the fringe is too short. I just don't like it. But that's me, you know, each to his own.
Indeed.
Different strokes for different folks.
So I highly recommend, if you need a little kind of throwback, then that's your watch.
Where,
Lucy,
did you watch it? I mean, I actually, do you remember way back when in early lockdown, when we all thought it was actually, we're doing something good, like stay home, save the NHS. I was still pregnant as well. We watched it and I don't think Aaron had seen it. So we watched it and we enjoyed it.
I believe it's on the Netflix.
Okay, good. So listeners out there, if you're in the UK, you can get it on the UK Netflix. How many
on the UK Netflix
blueberries would you give it? Do we usually blueberry? Because I feel like we should.
I feel like we should. We're going to blueberry today. Why not? Let's share some love. This is a solid 4 bloob.
Yes, I would agree with that.
It's not a 5. It has its faults.
The hair, mainly. Bloob. The haircut is actually minus a bloob.
I think Keanu's hair's worse than Swayze's, let's be honest. He's got a floppy 90s boy plant haircut.
The dream hair.
Ah, the 90s. Mm. Solid 4 bloob. I think, you know, it's an excellent rewatch. You can watch it again and again. If you've never seen it and you are into this sort of genre, I mean, it does literally have everything. I'm pretty sure at one point they even smoke peyote. So
yes, I think they do at the beach.
Bit of 90s drug culture in there for you as well. So there's some American football. It caters to everybody's tastes and likes, I believe. So highly recommend a watch. And yeah, 4 bloobs from me.
Yeah, I will co-sign that. So that's your something old. I will do my something new now. I feel like there's been a lot of new things that I've watched recently. And obviously we only really cover one of each, but there's been a few like documentaries on Netflix and just things that I've watched. But I have singled out one thing. A film, a Netflix film. I think it was released at the end of last year, like sort of Christmas time, but it's new to me. And it is Maggie Gyllenhaal's directorial debut, The Lost Daughter. I don't know if you've seen this. It's on Netflix. I think it was released directly onto Netflix.
With Olivia Colman.
Yes.
And Dakota Johnson.
Yes. Have you watched it?
Yes.
Right, good. Good.
So excited to hear what you think.
So... As you've seen it, you'll kind of know what I mean when I say there's not much plot, but anything I do say may give some things away. Not much happens really, does it?
No, I think it's one of those films that's very, it's beautifully shot. It's the story is heart-wrenching in that it's a very simple story and it's very easy to be caught up in it.
But the plot-wise, there's not a lot of action. So just for listeners who haven't seen it or are not aware of it. So it's, directed by Maggie Gyllenhaal. It's an adaptation of a short story by Elena Ferrante, starring Olivia Colman, Dakota Johnson, and Jesse Buckley, who plays the younger version of Olivia Colman. So there's like a dual narrative. So we see Olivia Colman's character Leda on holiday in a Greek island. Looks absolutely lovely. And the action flashes back to, I would say, maybe like 20 years prior, maybe a bit more. What would you say?
20 to 30.
Yeah, yeah, maybe 25 years to the young Leda, who is the mother of two young girls, played by Jessie Buckley. And you get from these flashbacks just the effect that motherhood had on Leda, and you see her full of love and full of life for her girls, but also very much smothered by motherhood and the sense of self that can go from being a mother. And it's quite taboo, some of the stuff that is covered, because I don't think you see that side of motherhood really ever.
It's very honest.
Which is essentially mothers that are not maternal, mothers that maybe chose work over their children, or other relationships. Yeah, it was very confronting, and watching it as a mother, I kind of, there are parts of it that I can kind of relate to, but it is very specific to mothers, I think, like those feelings. It's not just parenthood, it is the experience of being a mum. So yeah, you get you see it's very mysterious to begin with, isn't it, with Leda on this island and her interactions with this group of, like, I guess they're Italian American, are they, or are they Greek American?
No, they're Italian American, I think. That was the impression I got. Yeah.
I get the impression they're Italian, but then they had family on this Greek island, so maybe it's just, you know, a mishmash of cultures. So yeah, Nina is played by Dakota Johnson, and the kind of catalyst for some of the action and the story that will unfold on the island in that present day timeline is her daughter goes missing. And that sort of seems to do something to the character of Leda and leads her on this path where she does a few baffling things. So there's a kind
of... She has a few really fucking mental things, yeah. I will say that.
Yeah.
I have to admit, when I first started watching it, so I would describe it as like a tableau of motherhood from different perspectives and from different times. Not times as in time and date, but like different...
The different stages of motherhood.
Eras. Yeah, and different eras as well. And I think it's interesting that you say, you know, it's very much made for... You know, it's from the perspective of a mother. I actually found it quite interesting from the perspective of a daughter.
Yeah.
Seeing it, because I don't currently have children, seeing it from the perspective of a daughter who has a mother, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And seeing, you know, seeing it from their eyes and kind of seeing the two different sides from it. I thought it was really interestingly done. When I first started watching it, I did think it was going to be a murder mystery.
Yeah, I was watching it with Aaron, and he was sort of like, oh, I will say, like, this isn't really a spoiler, but I know some people would probably want to know. It's not about children dying, because I wouldn't want to watch anything.
No.
So it's nothing like that. It's like a psychological thriller, kind of a mystery, because there's allusions to her relationship with her children now as an adult, like, you know, as a middle-aged woman. And you do wonder, like, what has happened? And it's revealed through the flashbacks and her interactions with Nina, so the younger mother, who is also very stifled by motherhood. You can see that she's not always coping that well with having to be on demand for her child. You've got her sister who is pregnant. There's all these different sort of facets of motherhood and just the toll that it can take. And nothing really happened, but it was quite like tense and hard to watch. There's a lot of watching, people watching other people who are also being watched.
Mm. And I think also the dynamics of marriage.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's quite an interesting part of it, you know, and what it's like for women to not fit into the mold that they're expected to fit into as wives and mothers, you know, like as you were saying, you know, people are not necessarily natural mothers or naturally maternal in the way that is expected of a mother. I thought it was excellent. And Olivia Colman is stunning.
She's so good.
Every single thing she does. Like, she blew me away in this.
And it's also because she's not a conventional mother, but she's also not a conventional woman, because she's spiky and she's unfriendly and she won't just yield. And I think so much of being a woman is trying to be nice and softening the edges and making things easier for other people. And she just doesn't do it. She's quite rude, she's quite brisk. When they ask her if she doesn't mind moving, well, actually they don't They don't ask her, do they? The family at the beach say, you don't mind moving, do you? So we can all sit together. And she's like, no, I do mind. She does. She's not worried. She's fair enough. They weren't very polite, so she wasn't very polite either. But you don't
see that
on screen much. These women that, you know, she's not rude, but she's just very blunt, and it's quite confronting at times to watch someone like that when you're just used to women, yeah, just having to like facilitate the emotions of others.
Well, she's not a stereotypical subservient woman, and actually, and that's portrayed in some of the flashbacks, but also in, you know, her job. She's a lecturer. Mm. She's an academic.
Yeah,
and she was a budding female academic in a time where that wasn't really okay.
Yeah, like really a scholar of language, like
incredible linguistic scholar, and actually for me fascinating. I love linguistics, and I think it was very interesting, but also then to see kind of the flip side of that of her when she was ever so slightly unhinged in this.
Yes.
And not in a kind of psychotic way, but more just emotionally unhinged.
It seemed like she was having an episode though. What some of the things she does and then doesn't do, you think, why are you like, you've lost your mind a bit to do this and then to not even try and hide it.
So here's a question for you, Lucy. What did you think of the ending of this film?
Oh, I don't want to spoil anything.
Without spoiling it, I'll describe my feelings towards it, is that it was ambiguous.
It's an ambiguous ending, and I think you can think, I'm sure there's more than two, but I don't know how to, I don't really know what to say without spoiling.
No, it's difficult.
I'll just do a little spoiler. This is a spoiler warning, so I'm going to kind of, it's not going to give away the ending, but it's going to give away the potentials for the ending. So if you think, no, I want to watch this, I don't want to know, skip ahead like 30 seconds. Okay? Warning. Warning done. I think she's dead.
I hope she is in the way that
would
have given
me... I just hope she's just died.
Just hope she's fucking dead. Just that it would be a more kind of solid wrapping up of things, and I thought that too, and I kind of hoped for it, but I quite liked the fact that it was ambiguous and I wasn't really sure if she was.
Yeah, we can make our own decisions. Okay, so spoiler over. Yeah, it's hard. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it to people. I can't say, oh, this was really good, like really enjoyed watching it, because I felt quite tense throughout, but it is very well made. Yeah, really well shot. The music was good, art direction, performances, not overly long. Yeah, I thought it was...
No, 90 minutes.
It was good. It was a good film.
Thought-provoking and beautiful, I thought. Yeah, you'd have to be in a certain frame of mind to watch it. And I wouldn't, for example, suggest John watch it.
No, I don't know. He might see something in it. It just doesn't really go anywhere. But I think it's more the ideas at the heart of it. Some of the scenes are quite hard to watch, I found. Like, oh, gosh. Emotionally. But... yeah, very. It was a worthwhile watch. It's just, yeah, not an easy film to describe or to maybe recommend. But
no,
Blueberry,
it's a very ambiguous podcast. Yeah, I was going to ask you what your bloobs would be.
I find it difficult because if I give it 3, kind of undermines it a bit. But 4, I would only really give something 4 if I really enjoyed it. So I don't know. I'll give it 3.
3 is still a respectable score.
I'll give it 3, although quality-wise, it's probably a 4, but... enjoyment wise for me, I would give it a 3. And that's The Lost Daughter on Netflix. So give it a go if you're into something quite dark and psychological and unsettling without being explicit.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, wicked choice, Liz.
I'm really glad that you've watched it as well, because it's good to actually talk about it and not try and explain it to someone when you can't really give anything away.
Yeah. I have further thoughts to share with you offline about things that may also be spoilers, and I apologise to listeners that you may also be able to hear my cat purring next to me now.
Oh, little bonus.
In a very strange tone. So I'll be interested to see whether you've seen this. So this is a newly released film this last week in cinemas and on Disney Plus, and it's the prequel to a loved series of films. It is The King's Man.
Oh no.
Okay, well, firstly, it was the most enjoyable 2 hours I've had sat in front of the telly in a very long time. It was. So to give everybody the idea, so if you've ever watched Kingsman with Taron Egerton and Colin Firth and various other, you know,
British
actors,
men, yep.
This is essentially the prequel to Such with Ralph Fiennes, Jimin Hunsu again.
I think it's
Jimin, like Simon. I remember, yeah. Jimin Hunsu.
Love him, love him.
And then you've also got Risa Fans, Tom Hollander, and Matthew Good. So it starts at the very, very turn of the 20th century, but really the majority of the film is set around the start of World War One. So you'll recognise some famous characters from history, such as Franz Ferdinand,
Rasputin. Don't you know, you say you don't know. Sorry. Rasputin. Yep. Rasputin.
You've just reminded me of something quite funny, is that Joe said to me in the middle of the film, he said, what was Rasputin's first name? Wasn't it? Rah-rah?
It's like Igor, wasn't it?
He did not think it was funny.
Igor.
No, I think it was something like...
Ilvanich.
Because he was Ukrainian. It was something very Eastern European-esque. It was Risa Fans playing Rasputin.
The party it was born possibly, to play.
Honestly, it's one of the most genius casting characterization like pieces of art, to be honest, that I've ever seen.
Wow.
It was absolutely genius. It had me in stitches. But what I will say, and I think you'll know this from the Kingsman series, the Kingsman, not only is it funny, it has a bit of heart. There are some fantastically choreographed fight scenes, but it was also incredibly historically accurate.
That is always a plus in these films. I mean, you can suspend your disbelief, that's fine, but if they bother to get some of the facts right, that is a plus.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what? So there's a piece in it where a young lad is in the trenches. And we all know what that was like in the First World War. And there are some really heartbreaking pieces in there. And I did say when we were watching this that there's one particular scene that felt really incongruous in a way in this film, because obviously it's supposed to be more humorous, it's good fun, it's a bit of a jolly, you know, a bit of an escapade, that genuinely reminded me of how I felt in some of the scenes of 1917.
Okay, haven't seen that.
And Dunkirk.
Have seen that. Good film.
So very much, you know, heartbreaking young men at war being sacrificed on the front kind of thing. Not, you know, not obviously intentionally, but basically in hindsight there were. And it felt really odd, but in the moment, it was stunning, like really stunning. It's so brilliantly shot. I mean, they must have had a massive budget. Although, quite hilariously, Tom Hollander does play three different royals who are all related to each other, which is quite funny.
I bet I can name the royals.
Go on then.
Kaiser Wilhelm.
Correct.
Tsar Nicholas II.
Correct.
And I want to say George V. One of the Georges. Yes. Okay.
I'm sure it's George V.
Bloody love my history.
And he's, of course, brilliant. I don't know what I was really expecting. I thought I was just expecting a bit of a romp, but it was so much more. So much more. It was really clever. It was giving me Grand Budapest Hotel vibes, but mixed with...
Okay.
War. Yeah. But, I mean, there was that kind of... And you know what I mean by, like, that Grand Budapest Hotel thing, which
Wes Anderson vibes.
Yeah, very much Wes Anderson. There's a serious undertone, a serious storyline, a serious message. But the facade is hilarious. So, you know, Risa Fans as Rasputin doing a beautifully choreographed dance fight scene. I mean, I can already see your face trying not to laugh.
It's like, yeah.
How can you not laugh?
That sounds great.
But there was also peril and terror with it. And I thought it was genius. And I think, like, Ralph Fiennes is one of those actors that people, if you've never seen him in something where he does that deadpan funny posh
He's so
thing,
funny.
He's so good. It just had me in stitches.
What's, like, not funny, but just interesting about Ralph Fiennes is when he started out, like, have you ever seen The English Patient?
Yes. I mean, that's what I always go to.
Kind of heartthrob. And now he's kind of lost his looks. And I'm not, there's nothing wrong with the way he looks, but he's not dashing like he used to be. And now he's just a character actor, and I absolutely love it. And he does so many different roles.
It's genius.
And it's not just the posh, like, stoic, handsome man. It's, you know, various different roles. He's done loads. And I really, like, respect him for going down that route.
I do. And I almost feel like when you've done something like The English Patient and, you know, a lot of theatre and classical type acting, I reckon he's just having fun now.
Yeah.
You know, in the twilight of his life.
Well, he's not that old,
just
is
having
he?
A... No, I mean, I am just... I'm killing
You're
him
You're aging him massively.
I'm aging him middle-aged man. Disrespectfully. But, you know, he's more... He's in the later... years of his prime, and he's just having good fun with it and doing the stuff he really loves because he can. And why not? I genuinely think if you I genuinely would say if you are looking for something that and this is kind of sometimes when I what I quite like about a film is when something makes you go and Wikipedia it.
Yes.
You know, please tell me the history of, you know, Franz Ferdinand's wife. Yes. Where does she come from?
Have to do that.
You know, the assassination, what kicked off World War One, what then happened after that, you know, Rasputin's history and all that kind of stuff. And actually that a film that makes me still think about it and want to talk about it after I've watched it, and also proper belly laugh. That I mean that's gotta be a great piece of cinema, right?
Sounds great. I mean, I didn't really like the first Kingsman. Found it a bit naff and a bit misogynistic at times. So if I didn't like that, would I like this?
Yeah, I think you would. Because actually, I don't think you need to have watched Kingsman 1 or 2 to watch The King's Man. I mean, it would give you more joy to get to the end of it and be, spoiler warning, they form The Kingsman.
Okay, that's a given. That's a given.
That is the point of the film. But I don't actually think that you need to have watched Kingsman to enjoy it. I think you could kind of...
It's like a standalone piece.
Yeah. Okay, good. It's a sequel, a prequel that doesn't rely on...
Any prior knowledge.
No, I think you could still enjoy it if you haven't seen them. And I think I'd give this another solid 4 blues.
Okay, great. Is it directed by the same guy? Is it Matthew Vaughan who did those ones?
Yeah. Yeah, same guy. Because okay. It's all based around graphic novels, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't really have much interest in the Kingsman films, but...
I learned that from the credits, Lucy.
Okay, well, maybe I will give that a go.
Sunday afternoon, maybe.
Yeah, okay. Now we come to my something old. So I'm.
Do we now, Lucy?
We do. I'm going to talk about a film that I always think that I love, and whenever I watch it, I'm like, this is weird. This is tonally all over the place. And they've started making this film with one idea, and halfway through they've just gone, no, we're just going to make it something completely different. But I still love it because I think I'm just in love with Nicole Kidman in it. So the film is 1998 film Practical Magic, which I always used to watch around Halloween, but watched it more recently. It's just not that good a film. It's just, I forget every time.
It's so shit.
It's so strange. Like, it starts off like kind of a romantic comedy. They have these weird musical interludes. Then it goes quite dark horror. It does not know what it wants to be. But we talk about, you know, I said earlier, like, has anyone looked better on film than Keanu in Point Break? Man, Nicole Kidman would like a word, because in this film, I'm just obsessed with her hair.
She is peak her Nicole face. Kidman.
She's just so stunning. And this is opposite Sandra Bullock, who is also... the hair, the skin, the face.
Yeah.
Beyond stunning. And together, they're just... You just don't get that anymore. Like, these mega stars acting against each other. Like, they're sisters in it.
No.
And the aunts, I think it's Stockard Channing and Diane Weist, who are, like, the witchy aunts. And the scenery, like, it's just stunning. And all of that is great. And it kind of starts off quite lighthearted. And then... So, yeah, they're basically witches living in... I don't know, but it's really nice. I guess it's like around
small town America,
Massachusetts, somewhere on the coast. And Nicole Kidman's character kind of leaves and falls in with a bad dude, Goran Visnjic.
Isn't it?
From ER and other things. And it just, the tone is just all over the place. I watched it with Aaron the first time, and he was like, is this supposed to be a romantic comedy? I was like, yeah, I always forget that it's actually like, very strange, and it does not know what it wants to do. But I wish it had been either like, you know, like Hocus Pocus. Like, I know that is quite childish, but I love it. Or The Craft, which is also, is much more like grown up. But it's kind of this weird in between. Like, you never really see them being witches.
It's, do you know what? Lucy, that's an amazing, amazing something old. Because funny enough, I saw something yesterday that cropped up on one of the social medias talking about how, like, amazing Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman look in that film. And I have such a fondness for Practical Magic.
You just think you love it, but it's not a good film.
But you are totally right. It's tonally mental.
Would you like to have a guess of what percentage it's got on Rotten Tomatoes? Because I did check this earlier.
Oh, audience or critics?
I don't know. Audience, let's say. Oh, let me actually just check. But
I reckon that it's got a high audience score of about 76.
Okay.
And a critic score of 12.
Okay, well, I'm just seeing these lovely pictures of Nicole and her flaming hair.
Aren't they beautiful
My
as well?
My word, she's just stunning in this film. So the critics consent. So the, well, yeah, so critics, 21%.
Oh.
But the audience is 73. So you were very close on both counts.
Not a it's bad
the,
guess.
It's the nostalgia. Normally... It's the 90s. It's the scenery. It just, you remember all the good bits and all the like drinking tequila and singing "Put the Lime in the Cooking" and just that aspect of it. And you forget just how it jumps from her husband dying and she's really sad and then they kill a man. And it's just like bizarre. It's so bizarre. But I will always watch it because I love it.
That's the thing about like a nostalgic fondness for something or about nostalgia in general is you forget things like the tone makes no sense. Did they get a new director halfway through?
It jumps.
Who wrote this script? Yeah. And all you remember is like how fun. And you mentioned like Hocus Pocus and The Craft because I remember watching those films and thinking, I wish I was a witch.
I know.
And I think that's what it is about something like Practical Magic. Plus Sandra Bullock. She's my fave.
The aesthetic is just in the house. And her hair is so long. And she wears these like vest tops and these maxi skirts. And she just looks, she's like stunning. And then you've got Nicole, who's like sort of polar opposite looks wise, but just together and they really crackle. And I heard something, I was listening to a podcast the other day and it kind of mentioned Practical Magic. And he was like, that's just a gay film. Like, it's just a gay film. They pretend they're sisters. It's like, no, they're in love with each other. It's like, yeah, you could... It would buy it more if they were actually just lovers.
I'd believe that.
Like when they're in the... I'm not saying there's a sexual element to the film, but just their closeness and their chemistry. Like, it's a bit wasted, you being sisters. You should kiss.
Don't give anyone any ideas because there'll be a remake now and it will be...
They will be gay. I would love... I mean, put them both in it again. I still love them both.
Controversially, not a massive fan.
I know you don't like her, but...
But I will concede that in Practical Magic and Days of Thunder.
When she was really a natural redhead. No, she's a great actress and recently...
Maybe it's the hair I hate.
Red hair. Her hair's the best thing.
Maybe I like her natural hair.
Oh, yeah.
But it's, you know,
now it's blonde.
Maybe it's after that it upsets me.
But I do feel with Nicole Kidman, she's done so many interesting roles, like recently when she could have just gone down the kind of tall and blonde route, but like she was in Top of the Lake, she was in Lion, quite unglamorous roles where she just didn't look like a movie star and she was just acting. Like I think she's, and like Big Little Lies, I don't know if you ever watched Big Little Lies.
No, I have not.
Absolutely fantastic show. The first series is good, the second one not so much. She's great in that. I just love her. Big Nicole fan over here. And I love Sandra. And I watched The Proposal the other day as well with Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
She does Uptight very well. She does Uptight very well. My girl.
Do you know what? I have a real hankering now to go and watch Speed.
Oh my God, I was actually thinking about Speed. I was like, something Keanu, old.
Sandra.
That's it. That, oh yeah. Beauty.
Joe's out tonight. Maybe my Valentine treat to myself. Just go and watch Speed.
Oh my God. That's the love you need in your life from them two right there.
There you go. So, what a fantastic something old, something new.
I need to blueberry it and I'm going to give it 2 blueberries. One is for Nicole, one is for Sandra and the way they look and that's all. I can't really give it much
that's
more.
That's it.
And some of the scenery. It's so bad in many ways. But you know, you just, the nostalgia makes you love it. And I'm like, I will watch it again because I forget.
Yep.
And then every time I watch it, I'm like, nah, this is weird. This bit's weird.
I feel you there. Ah. Great, great selection. I'm delighted with this.
Yes, I think we've done well.
Very well indeed. You've done an excellent job of keeping us on track, Lucy.
Thank you. I do try my best. What is up next for us? I have no idea. So I would be interested to hear what is happening next on the podcast.
I'm going to make some assumptions about will be happening in the coming weeks. It'll be my birthday in 2 weeks' time, so that's very exciting.
17 again.
17 again, not even legal drinking age. So I'll be staying home with a cup of tea and some biscuits.
Sounds nice.
But I do believe that we have lots of exciting things happening, such as there will be another How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That coming up soon. Not only that, but we will also be looking forward to the next installment of John and Gaz's The Worst of Netflix.
Oh, yes.
And we will be back in a few weeks' time with the next Something Old, Something New. I do believe that we've got quite a few exciting event movies coming up. So just as another Something New, if you haven't seen it, go check out the Super Bowl full trailer for Doctor Strange the Multiverse
yes,
of Madness.
They were talking about this at work. I haven't watched it, and I haven't even watched the Lord of the Rings trailer yet. I don't know what's wrong with me with trailers. I go a bit funny
sometimes. I get a bit anxious about it. I don't seek them out.
Yeah, me neither.
But these are all big event things that we will be covering as they come onto the big and little screens in and around us. So that's roughly what I believe is coming up next, as I tell you with my practically magic crystal ball.
Sounds good to me. Right, well, thank you for joining me, Emma. I hope you enjoy your Valentine's date with Sandy and Keanu sitting on the bus.
Thank you. I hope that you find something suitably wonderful, equally wonderful to watch for your Valentine's too. And happy Valentine's to all our listeners.
Yes, happy Valentine's. Well, we're on season 5 of The Wire, so it's going to get romantic. Ooh. Up in here.
Proper romantic.
I cannot wait for that to be my Something Old / Something New once I've watched the whole season, and I can go in on The Wire on the podcast.
Oh,
it's going to be great.
I cannot wait either.
Maybe the next
one. Super exciting. Well, thank you very much, Lucy, for hosting. You've been super.
Thank you, Emma, for turning up, turning on, tuning in.
Too right. And now it's time for us to clock out.
Thank you, listeners. Thanks for tuning in. Stay safe, and we will see you soon. Bye.
Bye.